There's no video of President Trump sucking a ding-dong. I never sucked any ding-dongs. But I'll tell you, if they were going to blackmail me to start World War III about one, I'd say, hey, I sucked a ball, golf ball through a freaking garden hose.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Ooh, yeah. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of the 12FL Radio Show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me, of course, I've got the number one good and golden boy. I'm talking, of course, about the 365 Days of Horror, or as we're going to call him, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
It's cold.
And on your end of the country, Brenna side, Breno, is it also cold?
I mean, that's a subjective take. You know, I mean, 8 degrees might be comfortable for some people. If you live in Serbia, that might be a pretty nice day.
Bemidji, yeah. Minnesota.
It's fucking cold.
You have some degrees, which is better than in other situations where you have a negative degree. So, perspective.
But it feels like negative degrees.
Life is a negative degree.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound good. Why is it so cold?
Polar vortex.
Huh. It was about 80 degrees here in Texas yesterday.
My experience in college is like a negative degree.
If you still owe on it, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you don't get to print out your resume until you're finished paying them.
Well, aside from polar vortexing and doing poorly in school, how are we doing?
Well, the pantry's looking a little barren again this week. We don't have a lot of metal bits and news and things like that. But we could
entirely true. Yeah. Let me go ahead and do a little preview for our Patreon subscribers, because I forget to do this all the fucking time. We listened to Joey DeMaio's. I'm sorry. Let me pull up the name of his podcast. Words of Power with Joey DeMaio podcast. And we're going to be getting into that on the bonus show. And I got to tell you, like, most of my brain space is devoted to his words of power right now. So I've kind of let, like, everything else go by the wayside. Like, you know, my plants are dying, my pets are hungry, because all I can think about are these words of power.
Words and mouth noises of power.
Very moist mouth noises with Joey DeMaio would be a good podcast name.
He records in like his own Valhalla studio in upstate New York. And, you know, it's all top of the line equipment. Everything sounds great, but it sounds too great. And it's very much noises.
Like, you have like little filters you can use to cut out your gross mouth noises. I guess he doesn't want to apply those. You know.
Yeah. Like, raise the noise floor just a little bit so we just don't have to hear you smacking your lips. I mean, maybe he just smells what his mom is cooking upstairs and he just can't help but salivate.
I gotta tell you, his voice, though, is not at all what we have portrayed it to be on the show. We have offered a false bill of goods, and I must apologize to listeners for that.
I mean, the only voice representation I ever had of Joey DeMaio was just, oh, mom.
Yeah, and it doesn't really sound like that. So, anyway, that's a preview for the Patreon subscribers. By the time you hear this, that show is up live on Patreon. You can go listen to it. It's something else. But outside of Joey DeMaio, and his incredible words of power, there are other things going on. Like, for example, Breno, you're gambling online, and it's making me proud.
Yeah, I thought about fantasy football. I thought about maybe playing some online poker, all those sorts of other things that are equally risky. And I decided that instead what I would do is just invest a little bit of money in a couple stocks right now, a couple bits of cryptocurrency maybe. And today the big cryptocurrency of the week is Dogecoin or Dogecoin or however you want to pronounce the meme.
It's 2021, and the hottest investment tip right now is to buy the meme cryptocurrency from, like, I don't know, 2009.
It's a very dumb, stupid idea, and we talked about it a bit before the show. And essentially, my state of mind is I'm taking $100 to the local gas station, and I'm just making everybody behind me fucking wait as long as possible, even though gas stations are a place you need to get in and out. It should be called a convenience store for a reason. I'm going to make everybody stand behind me for 10 minutes while I just point and yell what fucking dumb, random, colorful scratch ticket I want shoved into my pockets. For like hundreds of dollars. So,
and then when you lose, you gotta rip them up and just drop them on the floor and walk out.
Yeah, just drop them on the fucking parking lot everywhere.
Yeah, and then walk right back in and stand at the front of the counter for another 10 minutes. Even though there's a pandemic going on and people want to buy their, you know, Four Loko or whatever and get the fuck out so they can get drunk safely at home. No, you have to stand there and painstakingly pick 15 different scratch-offs that you will then litter in the goddamn parking lot again after that.
Scratching at the counter with your ass sticking out in front of everyone.
Just my fucking complete butt crack hanging out from above my Carhartt pants. I'm just going to fucking show everyone just how bad I want to win.
No, I think you've got the right attitude on this. We're experiencing tulip mania here, where people are, they've got visions of riches in their eyes, and I can't fault anybody for that. This country sucks, and it's hard to make money. So if there's a way that you can do it quickly, I'm in support of it, especially if it doesn't like hurt anybody. And I think that you're thinking about it the right way, which is this is straight gambling. It's not it's not anything else.
Yeah,
that's the healthy way of looking at this.
I plan to lose everything I invest into it. It's just kind of for fun. If you really kind of look into what's going on with Wall Street and why people are doing it and the Wall Street bets thread that kind of blew everything up, the whole point is to just fuck with the system, really. And, I'm willing to spend some money as like the price of admission for that ride just a bit.
The spectacle. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people that are, leveraging beyond their means, hoping for something that is unlikely to happen.
Right.
And I gotta say, that doesn't look good. That doesn't feel good to me. But if you've got like a few extra spare bucks and you just want to play, I think that's good. That's fine. You know?
Right. Don't put your life savings into this, please.
No, please never don't.
Like, that's not what the point of any of this is. It's just kind of exposing the game, really. It's like you, I can't recall if it's you who said it, but it's like you gambled with your broker and so they canceled the Super Bowl.
The way that I looked at this, because I also got up in tulip mania a little bit, I don't have a ton of spare cash right now, but I did get, a very small stimulus check last week. Really, really small, and I'm a little bit annoyed about that. So I decided to put some of that money that I could afford to lose into a couple of those minor stocks that are kind of, causing a lot of fuss right now. And I log in one morning and see that, like, it's doing outstanding. And it was doing so outstanding that all of the platforms decided that you could no longer buy more of it. You could only sell it, which, of course, has an actual depressing effect on the price of it. And I looked at that as, like, if I decided to, put a prop bet on the Super Bowl and my bookie came around and told me, Super Bowl's canceled, kid. And that money, that's going to stay there. But, hey, you can invest in a hockey game if you like.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's all bullshit. And I hate it. Like, I actually hate it. I hate the memes. I hate the discussions about it. I think there probably will be negative consequences overall, like economically in some way that we don't quite understand. But I don't know. It's funny that, like, billionaire hedge fund managers are, like, losing everything. really just funny to me.
Losing everything and as much as a billionaire can, which is to say, like, they'll find another source of credit and, like, you know, just put out their cigarette again on you soon.
Sure. Whatever insurance coverage they have is, like, quadruple whatever money you're going to see in a lifetime, and it instantly covers them. Like, they will be okay. They know this stuff is coming. No matter how dumb their bow tie and glasses is, and they complain on Fox News, like, they don't know what broke and bankrupt really is, so...
No. They're never going to have to worry about, like, having enough cash to buy a grilled cheese sandwich, or at least the materials for a grilled cheese sandwich.
They can sell one car and survive for years, you know what I mean? Like, they already made their money. They're fine. It's just the way it is. So there's no heavy metal cryptocurrency quite yet, so...
There will be. Right. But I know, you know, we've established this over the years that I am pro-gambling. Breno, it sounds like you're coming around. Jordan, I know that you have strong anti feelings about this, though.
I hate everything about this week.
Can you tell me why? Like, no. I understand if you feel like overwhelmed by all this. That's like taking up all the oxygen in the room or whatever. I get that, but like, what specifically about it's doing it?
I mean, yeah, part of it is just constant news stories and people tweeting about it and like, oh, here's a good explainer, and 200,000 retweets, and I just want it out of my face. That's a big part of it. And the other is just, I don't care about Wall Street. I don't care about investing. I don't care about the stock market. I'm never going to be investing in anything beyond like my work's retirement that just takes money out of my paycheck every 2 weeks. I don't really think there's good guys in the situation. I think it's bad hedge fund people being gamed by bad Reddit people. Part of it is like mob mentality, which I really, you know, have an aversion to, and everyone rushing at the gate yelling, soy, 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 buy now, invest in Waffles. And, you know, this doesn't help GameStop employees. GameStop is a notoriously terrible place to work.
Yeah, it's awful to its employees. Yeah, I was a former GameStop employee. It sucks.
And, yeah, and, you know, this could potentially hasten GameStop's end. Whatever. Not that I'm that sad about it. But still, I don't know. In a month or two, this probably will be a distant memory. I have had enough of it, and I don't want to hear about it again.
I rewatched Trading Places the other day, before all this hubbub kicked off, I guess. And I hadn't seen it in a while. When's the last time you guys saw that movie?
A couple of years.
I mean, everybody surely is familiar with the storyline. You know, you've got it's Dan Aykroyd. You got Eddie Murphy. You know, the evil oligarchs, you know, take down Dan Aykroyd and elevate Eddie Murphy. But they find, you know, solidarity together, and they do a lot of financial crimes to bring down the you know, the Statler and Waldorf guy, whatever their names
are. The Dukes.
And I guess what got me on this most recent watch through is that, you know, at the end of the movie, you know, Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, they're richer than hell. Their butler is richer than hell, and you know, to celebrate their on some island where their butler has a butler now. Essentially, they have taken their former economic class and ensnared somebody else with it. There's no kind of freedom found in this movie. There's just somebody else being subjugated.
and Wall Street remains, and not much has changed.
Yeah. No, the systems that, you know, make everybody miserable stay the same, but they made it rich.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Bernie Sanders bought a Maserati and a mansion. Like, fuck you guys. He sold the book, you know? It's just what happened. There's photos of him doing it. It's great.
Not Bernie Sanders in the Maserati, by the way.
It is. It's him. I know it's him. Don't be a Soros check collector, okay? It's him. And you know, I mean, his house is what it is. Like, the guy's got money, he deserves that money, he went through a lot to get there, and now he's got
which house? He has multiple houses,
right? So there you go. I'm barely affording my fucking apartment.
He's got a $400 coat, and I don't own a $400 coat. You guys?
I've had the same coat since college.
Yeah. I bought a $25 coat from Walmart. That's my coat. Yeah.
I went to the Burlington Coat Factory, which is the place you go to buy coats.
I think it's just Burlington now. It's not even Coat Factory.
Damn. I guess they haven't changed the signage at my local.
Sell like weird FUBU-esque stuff that hasn't been in style for like any culture in like 20 years.
If you have a better location to buy South Pole clothing, I'd like to hear it.
A Nietzsche sweatshirt.
1999 JCPenney.
I have completely lost the plot on this episode, boys. I apologize.
Listen, we'll jump into some hard riff and rocking ass, horns around the world metal news.
I've got something. It's fucking, referencing gambling earlier. It's fucking bye week right now before Super Bowl Sunday. So let's go ahead and, wax off that old chestnut. What wasn't Metallica playing the Super Bowl?
Oh, man.
Every year.
Shut the fuck up.
Who is it this year? It's The Weeknd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in Uncut Gems, great movie, so I have nothing but high hopes for him. To answer your question, the Metallica is never going to play a Super Bowl halftime show, and you have to find other content for your blog. I apologize.
I hope they do play, but like just play their worst songs. They don't play...
I think we talked about this in the past, like it would definitely just be like stuff from Load, right?
Frantic.
Yeah. That would actually be very funny.
Or you get a sloppy rendition of fucking Master of Puppets with like their current guitar tone. And do you guys really want that?
They do a medley of their hits because that's what the Super Bowl halftime show is now. It's just a couple of different parts of songs. And then whatever pop star is popular this year comes out and joins them. So I don't know. Dua Lipa will do The Memory Remains?
I just think the hilarious... I don't know, sort of dissonance of the Super Bowl halftime show is that everybody up there in the stands is like some middle-aged mustachioed dad with a 30-year-old windbreaker, and you're gonna come out and have fucking like Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake come out and do a song and dance like any of these guys could give any sort of a fuck. It's just not football.
What kills me every year about the halftime show is like the totally blank-eyed people that they have on the field, like just being the most excited anybody could ever be to see the halftime act that year. I don't know where they get these guys, and to be honest, if these people ever found sentience, like I think we'd all be in a lot of trouble.
They're cheap actors that they hire. It's just like when you see a Rolling Stone live concert and there's gorgeous supermodels dancing around to 80-year-old Mick Jagger. They just pay them.
I don't know what they get paid, but you never seen a more committed to being enthusiastic person in your life.
What about when... What about when Creed played the halftime show and you had the guy with the big blankets that he was able to fly in the air with and he's bald?
That wasn't the Super Bowl halftime show. That was the Thanksgiving game. And I remember that because I was watching, I was with my family watching that in fucking rapt attention. That was the tightest shit.
Scott Stapp in his Cowboys jersey, which might have been tucked in.
I believe it was. Yeah. That was like the first big game after 9/11. So they had to make a powerful statement, and I have thought about that probably on a monthly basis since it happened. So they made their fucking statement.
Yeah. Where is that guy now? Is what I want to know. The bald guy flying on his I don't know what you would call it, ribbon art. What is that? I know it's a thing where
he's flying on curtains or some shit.
Right. There's like a workshop you can do for local folks in any given weird art collective in your area. They have like workshops where you can learn how to do like a ribbon dance from 40 feet in the air and crack your tooth. And like, that's what that guy was doing all over the football field. And, you know, he was the best at it. And now he's a memory. No one knows who he is. No one knows what he's doing.
He's probably like in a Cirque du Soleil type thing, right? They got a lot of those. They got a lot of Cirques du Soleils.
I imagine you got to kind of, you got to go with the gigging thing. I mean, maybe he has an agent after making it so big during the Creed halftime show. So I don't know. We got to do like a full Where Are They Now on this guy.
I think my bigger takeaway from this is that Scott Sapp was a fucking carpetbagger. You know, because the most recent sports memory you have with Scott Stapp of Creed, of course, is the Marlins will soar. That thing Marlins love to do.
Yeah. Scott Stapp was a douchebagger, too.
Got his ass.
Got him. So, yeah, I guess we can move on.
I have one last thought with the Super Bowl and Metallica, and that I would be absolutely beside myself with joy if the halftime act was just Lars and crew doing the cover sketches that they do at live shows now.
Like Robert Trujillo and Kirk Hammett. I think Lars and James take a break.
Oh yeah, they have to go smoke a cigarette while Trujillo and Kirk you know, just completely butcher Purple Rain. I think that would be absolutely fantastic. So that is what I would like to happen for all future Super Bowls, not just, you know, not just one. I think that should be the regular for every upcoming halftime show.
Right. I hope that what they do is they just get Lars drumming by himself behind, I don't know, somebody who had one of those McDonald's meal deals last year. One of those guys.
Because I think the first, I don't know, several halftimes, like during the Super Bowl games, they had just like, you know, marching bands, and then they had Up With People, whatever that was, do like five in a row. And I think that, you know, having Metallica play their covers for at least five Super Bowls, I would be satisfied then.
Okay. Five in a row.
Five in a row. Anyway, moving on. I've lost my train of thought. We had a couple things that we wanted to talk about, right?
We got just a real quick tidbit. This kind of shows just how lacking in metal news the world has been. Lamb of God's Mark Morton, he tweeted something, just a tweet. We got an article written about a tweet, and basically it's just what it's like to be in a touring band. And he's got a little seven-figure list here about all the major aspects of being in a touring band, if you want me to read it to you.
Yeah, this is news to me. Go ahead and share it with the world.
Okay, so this is, again, this is Mark Morton from Lamb of God. He's got a neat guitar, and he plays the riffs. He's a riffmeister, and this is what he tells you about being in a touring band. Okay, so Mark Morton writes, if you ever want to know what it's like to be in a touring band, .. Number one, rent a nice RV. Number two, pick up 6 to 10 of your buddies. And number three, drive 400 miles, find a gravel parking lot and park. Number four, order pizza. Number five, play guitar for 1 hour. Coming in at number six, at 2 a.m., leave and drive another 400 miles. Number seven, repeat steps 3 to 6 for 7 weeks. And that's it. That's the tweet.
That doesn't sound so bad.
Right. That sounds pretty awesome. I think it's a lot better than most people's touring experience.
So I get to hang out with my buddies and eat pizza and play guitar and then, you know, go do it again.
Dude, this is like the stuff I wait for all week when I'm at work. Like, I would just love to hang out and have pizza with my buddies and, like, play a guitar for an hour.
I mean, I'm sure that, you know, the road has its drawbacks, as every hard rockin' guitar band has ever said in a ballad. But at the same time, like, have you ever spent at least 40 hours a week in a cube form?
Right, man. It's like whenever these guys complain about what it's like to go on tour, I think they forget what the 9-to-5 is really like. I mean, yeah, you get to go home. Yeah, you get to watch your own TV on your own couch at the end of the day, but just in preparation to fucking do it again, you know?
I take a little bit of an issue with some of the things he said because there's some caveats that weren't included.
Right.
Like, he's not procuring the van or the bus that they're traveling in. He's not the one driving it. Food is typically provided at the shows that they're playing. Like, just other people are doing work.
Yeah, I guess at the level of Lamb of God, you know, it's a little bit different. You get to pick out what's in your deli tray.
When you're being Slayer's opening band for a year, like, you got stuff taken care of. You're not scrambling to go to the Wawa to pick up food for the next week.
I also take umbrage with the fact that one of the steps, the critical steps missing here is go to Scotland and beat the shit out of your vocalist because he's doing a dumb Scottish accent and acting drunk, and you just punch him in the face and while you're holding his neck in the ground.
Wait, what?
You've never seen video of that.
Yeah. No.
So, you're the vocalist there. Fuck.
Randy Blythe.
He's, this was his fucking baseball hat short hair days. He's wearing a kilt. And they're in Scotland, and he's getting in a, I think it's Mark's face, just, and he's doing a Scottish accent, and Mark's like, you're not even Scottish, bro, like, shut the fuck up, dude. And then it just leads to him throwing him outside the tour bus, like, holding his neck against the ground, and just absolutely battering him in the face.
Jesus Christ. I gotta pull that up.
It's like part of their documentary that they made.
You could just Google Randy Blythe fight, and it comes up. It's him versus Mark Morton. It's on Daily Motion.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can find a clip and play the sound of him getting his ass kicked. But, yeah, that should be a very critical step if you're talking about being in a touring band on a bus, is that eventually your vocalist, you know, who does pretty much next to nothing, doesn't help load in or anything, he gets drunk in a way that he doesn't deserve and comes up and gets in people's faces like he's a real artist. So you got to hit him.
You fucking asshole. You fucking hit me.
I'm sick of your shit, dude.
You're an idiot. You fucking moron. I bought you drinks tonight. You fucking hit me.
You're American,
I'm sick of your fucking shit.
Fuck off. Let go of me. Let go of me. No, I'm going to hit him.
No, you're not.
Mark, I'm telling you, that's it.
Randy, ease it.
Don't grab my motherfucking throat. Do you understand me? Calm the fuck down. Right now.
Randy.
Boss.
I'm fucking
sorry,
you guys.
God damn it!
Oh, you got me, motherfucker. Right,
let him go, Randy. Fuck, beat the shit out of him. No, I'm not gonna fucking tell you again.
If you're successful enough, you can have two tour buses like Cold Chamber did when they all hated each other.
Oh, that's the dream right there.
I would love to read more about the pressures of Cold Chamber at the height of their popularity. Like, God, it's tough, you know. You're out there wearing entirely mesh, and your bandmates are just getting on your asses.
Dude, your nipples must be so chafed in those shirts after an hour of guitar. You know, I get it, but
I imagine so. I mean, you're sweating down into your giant pants, and they're just becoming a swamp around your ankles. It seems like it might be a tough go of things.
Big truck.
Yeah, I guess that's all we got to say about that, though. I mean, yeah, touring life, it's hard. It's really hard.
It's
so
kind of
glad.
It's weird to bring this up now.
Right.
Yeah. You can't tour.
What an odd tweet to just randomly come from the ether of this guy's mind. And one thing that I see happening a lot is, like you guys were mentioning earlier, they were booking festivals all over the place, and now they're getting canceled again all over the place.
Damn. Who could have seen it coming?
Right. It's just like, what a mind blower. You guys just, you have no concept whatsoever of when these restrictions are going to get lifted. You have no plans for that. It has nothing to do with you or what you want, and yet you come up with some date where there's definitely going to be a festival, and you start selling tickets for it.
At my old job, I had a work subscription to McKinsey Reports, you know, like that evil firm that basically, you know, is helping and destroy the world. Pete Buttigieg is a fellow or whatever. Anyway, like, they're bad people, but I kind of trust what they have to say about certain things, where, you know, the last report that I got from them said, hey, like, you know, things will not start getting back to normal until at least fall of 2021. And like that's you know, mostly publicly available information from, you know, smart finance bro types. Like it seems like that might be worth taking into consideration. The people that, you know, understand all the money that's flowing into the world, like when you could maybe consider scheduling your festival. But I guess going with a good feeling about what might be what might be feasible works better.
It can't possibly be that much longer.
I think they're just so hungry to be the first one out there and expect everyone to just buy tickets because it's going to be the first sorts of live entertainment they've had, that they're just willing to risk having to cancel their big festival for a second or sometimes third time. That it's just, well, we tried. What are you going to do? And I don't think they're considering the consequences of being the first one out there and becoming a super spitter event.
That's a great take, because I think you're dead on about the fact that they really want to be like the first big show. Like in the case of something like, you know, Maryland Death Fest, it's not usually like the world's biggest festival. But in this case, I think you have so many metal fans that are so hungry for a really big metal festival that they would probably have like a record breaking attendance if it was safe and the restrictions were over, and, you know, possibly, because that's what I've been seeing with humanity, is that the moment people are allowed to, they just do it. They don't, you know, I personally would feel like if you were to open up a festival, and even once the restrictions are over, I think people are so timid and traumatized that they wouldn't show up, or at least that's how I would feel. Like, I would just be like, yeah, I know there's shows now, but I don't know if I'm ready yet. I don't know if I want to go out there and rub shoulders with 500 sweaty idiots right now.
I don't
want
to do that when it's not a pandemic.
Yeah.
You're not kidding, like, man. It's just how it is.
I learned this week that this brewery in Austin, they started doing concerts. Like, you have to wear a mask and it's outdoors, but, I mean, it's the same shit, like, just weekly concert series now. Just a bunch of people fucking packed in, you know, pulling their masks off to order beers and shout in each other's faces because it's too loud because there's music going on. So I have to see your lips now. It's like we're in like stage 5 restrictions or whatever. Like, you know, a bunch of people are dying daily in the city from COVID. It's like, what's the fucking point?
Still bad.
What is the fucking point of any of this?
Mary, we're still dropping like flies out there. It's still a thing. Coronavirus, like we always say over and over, it doesn't care if you're bored or tired of it. It doesn't care. It's still a thing. So, I don't know. I think it's incredibly stupid to be scheduling anything right now. I don't think anyone should be scheduling a damn thing until we get some kind of real solid date for when this kind of thing is okay. And it's going to be long after everybody in the entire populace is vaccinated.
It's going to be a while. Yeah. Going to be a fair bit of time. Again, had the vaccine rollout not been botched, you might be looking at fall of 2021. But as that happened, it got botched. So add some months to it.
And then there's going to be mutations. I mean, that's going on now, too, with different variants. Like, even if you get vaccinated, it could crop up that, oh, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that you got doesn't take care of this new thing, and oops, you went to go see Toby Keith, and now you're lying in the hospital bed.
I hate when that happens.
Damn it.
Whoopsie doodle, Toby Keith.
I woke up at another Toby Keith show.
God damn it.
Not again.
Yeah, no, that's also a possibility. Like, you know, last year when there was like news of a pandemic or whatever, like I was like, no fucking way, this will be fine. Man, I was really, really wrong.
Part of that is because, especially in the US, there's always at least once or twice a year a news story will crop up of a new disease that's hitting another country in the world. And we go, oh no, it's going to come here, it's going to come here. And then the stories just stop. It was kind of like the same thing. It's like, oh, this is in China. It's over there. It's fine.
SARS, Ebola virus, chicken flu, all that shit.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the like fear-mongering of local news, especially. Like, every other story is like, is your child smoking hair? I don't know, maybe.
Licking toad, yeah. Yeah, it's just how it's, and that's how I felt too. Like back in 2019, I saw the reports on China, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's China. They don't, like, nothing's right over there. It's just the restrictions are fucked up, but everybody's on top of each other, living in like huddled apartments that are also factories. That's China. That's not gonna happen here. And then, you know, America's really no different. So
we got to... Yeah. Well, you live and you learn, you know.
Well, some of us live.
Yeah, some of us, yeah. Fair. No, in the meantime, like, I keep seeing dudes expose, you know, real scumbag pay-to-play type dudes. Like, this entire time, this entire fucking last year, every, you know, 10-cent fucking pay-to-play promoter has been trying to put on shows. And it's not getting any less pathetic.
I mean, I think it goes to show you, like, these... Because one thing was there was, like, there's a lot of people coming out against promoters that I saw more than usual. Like three or four guys. I can't name any of them. One of them had that pink beard. Remember that guy? They had that huge expose on Metal Sucks.
Oh, yeah. The guy that is a fucking sex pest. The guy that moved to Thailand or whatever.
I mean, obviously, most of them don't have the money to, like, run away to Thailand to avoid their crimes or whatever, but...
To be a full-time sex criminal.
But, I mean, just, they all want to be that guy, and they all act like that guy.
No, they all, you know, they've got their hustle goals to become a full-time sex criminal like that guy.
So yeah, pay-to-play promoters, full-time sex criminals. So yeah, I can't wait for them to book some more shows for us.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Like I try to imagine, like how that process goes. Like you have enough desperate dudes who are willing to watch each other's bands for 9 hours and have literally no one else show up. And if that would just be like an isolated event where everybody coughs in each other's faces and they go home for 2 weeks, like I think that'd be fine.
If just all of the local bands had COVID-19 and nobody else, I think that the whole pandemic wouldn't have been so bad, right?
Yeah, and also like it might be like a market correction for your local gig economy.
it's just the sad rotation of being at one of those things where you got 20 guys standing there watching, all wearing band shirts and jeans, and then the band gets off a stage, and then five guys in the crowd go on the stage, and it's just like that. It's surreal, almost. Just like a rotation, just a circle of sadness.
Yes, circle of sneezes. There is one thing that like happened forever ago, because you know the circle of life moves in a circle and it moves very fast.
Perfect
circle. Do you remember like when the fucking Georgia Senate race was going on?
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, and then the Capitol was sieged, and all that news went away.
Yes, well, I mean, yeah, because there's tulip mania going on, man. Like, I can't keep two stories in my head at once.
Well, the fucking cupboards are probably paltry for your local psycho newscast. So, I don't know, anything that's big news, they just blow it up out of proportion. And then it's like you said, it's like a vicious cycle, so... There's this whole thing, dude. It's a Reddit thread that started this, an Elon Musk tweet. That's all it was, and now it's like a global phenomenon.
Well, before all that, like there was another thing that happened. I think it got memory holed quickly. I mean, within a 24-hour cycle, everybody saw it, and then we, you know, collectively just purged it from our brains. Woke up the next morning with missing time or whatever. But Jordan, you remember this one because you don't abuse substances like I do.
I'm like an elephant. Jordan doesn't forget.
what happened on this one?
Legendary punk band Dead Kennedys praised Senator Mitt Romney of all people on Twitter.
Not just Mitt Romney. There was also another one. There was old Lindsey Graham.
What? I knew it was the Mitt Romney thing. I didn't know they fucking liked Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, like Dead Kennedys, you know, that band that was pretty radical in the early 80s, you know, had a lot of good hits about, you know, how fucking shitty the cops and landlords and rednecks and, Jerry Brown.
One of their most famous songs is about Democrat Governor Jerry Brown.
Jerry Brown, like, leading people into, like, death camps, which that one is kind of a head scratcher now in 2021, I guess.
Well, it was times have changed so much.
Anyway,
completely.
Rather than, you know, focusing their ire on Democrat Jerry Brown, they are instead focusing their praise, being more positive as we should all be, by giving a big punk rock thank you to Mitt Romney, Evan McMuffin, and Lindsey Graham.
I loved it when Eve Six chimed in and said, "Wow, we're more punk than you guys." How did that happen?
Man, like, I forgot Eve Six jumped out of the ether to be like a cool irony account now, I guess. But for, like, I was drinking, I was looking at Twitter, I saw the Dead Kennedys, come out and praise all of these fucking ghouls for, I don't know, what did no they reason. Do that was praiseworthy?
I don't know. I don't fucking know. I have no idea. Maybe be, you know, mediocre Republicans as opposed to, like, full tilt psycho right wing insurrection starting Republicans.
It was mostly because Romney condemned Trump after the rioting, and they said, you know, Mitt Romney cares about the USA was the tweet essentially, and then everyone went like, what? Dead Kennedys, why are you saying this? Including Jello Biafra, who tweeted out from the Alternative Tentacles and Twitter account and Facebook page, "As if today couldn't get any weirder, look who posted this. How dumb and clueless can you get? Was it scab singer Skip, who recently denied Dead Kennedys are a political band, just a, quote, a social satire band? East Bay Ray? It sure as hell wasn't me."
I love to do a social satire. I think it's good, especially when you don't have any points of direction. It's just a general satire.
And there was later follow-up from the band that didn't get reported anywhere near as much as the initial tweet and Jello Biafra's response. East Bay Ray said, "For the record, neither Skip nor I had anything to do with a recent DK tweet. But gee, why would anyone have a problem with an anti-Trump, pro-democracy speech, even if it was by an a-hole?" And the Dead Kennedys account then quote tweeted that, saying, "The tweet yesterday was solely the social media manager's view and not the band, who wasn't consulted. Like everyone who was watching the events unfold yesterday, it was nice to see the rats leaving the ship."
That's the fucking thing right there, is just have your bassist do it. Don't have some fucking guy do it for your Twitter account. Just, like, have at least a bandmate do it.
If there's one thing that we should all do, it's we should praise rats for leaving a sinking ship.
Yeah. It's just like, wow, he did the bare minimum. What a true American.
The height of integrity, saving your own ass. No, that's good. I'm glad that, you know. God, what? How sad. How sad entirely. Like, I know that there's all this history and all these lawsuits between Jello and, you know, East Bay Ray and all this shit. It hasn't, you know, Dead Kennedys have not been a relevant band since, like, I don't know, before I was born, I guess. But it's pretty, boy, it's something. I think that the cable news did a number on these older punks.
It seems to be happening a lot more. Just these old 80s bands that, or whatever, counterculture, anti-Reagan, anti-whatever, now just, like, old men who watch Fox News and kind of say stupid things. Like, was it the guy from Amoebix that we talked about a while ago?
Oh, the guy from Amoebix that's, like, a full-on Holocaust denier now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, maybe for some of these people, this was kind of there and you just never noticed, or they didn't really say it out loud. But, you know, now they have Twitter and all these places where they can spout off stupid things that their brains have been rotted, whether through YouTube clips or Fox News or OANN or Newsmax.
I think the 80s were really and truly more cursed than we've ever considered before. Like, I mean, the height of Reagan mania, the height of anti-communism, the height of, like, out-of-control consumerism. And, like, aside from, you know, a couple of acts being there and saying, like, hey, we're against these prevailing norms, like, not really having anything to articulate aside from I don't like this. And then just having their beliefs filled in with, like, I don't know, watching cable news after that.
I don't like this. It's because of immigrants.
Yeah. But now that, like, Reagan's dead, things are finally back on track.
Finally, man.
So, I don't know. I think that... I don't think that there's anybody from that time that you can count on to have, like, generally being all together in terms of abuse. Maybe, is there anybody you can think of that's, like, with it?
I mean, I guess the guys that are with it don't stand out as much. They don't say as much. It's like the biggest assholes are the loudest ones, you know?
That makes sense.
I didn't read the article, but Joey Shithead from DOA is now, like, a city councilor in British Columbia. It's part of, like, the local Green Party, I think.
Councilman Shithead, you have the stand.
Please, Mr. Shithead's my father. Call me Joey Shithead.
That's kind of cool, I guess. I see people praising Sebastian Bach quite a bit for basically not being a massive asshole now.
He's only a massive asshole to Chris Jericho, who deserves every bit of it.
Yeah, yeah. But again, like, you know, he was pretty fucking cursed in the 80s, too. So I don't know. I think it's either age or the era or a possibility of both. But for the most part, entirely cursed, entirely twisted views coming from that realm of it.
Yeah, I mean, then there's, I think you get surprised by people who you expect to be shitty and they're not, like an Axl Rose, for example.
Axl Rose is one of the most interesting and confusing figures from all of music to me personally. I know that every time he comes up, I'm contractually obligated to mention his contractually obligated whole roast pig. But he seems to be formulating some theories and ideas on his own. It's interesting. I think he's doing better.
He's got his head in the right place, that one. Sometimes, not creatively, but maybe politically.
Somewhat, as much as you can, like, for being worth like $300 million and having absolutely no connection to being a real person since 1985.
Nothing of worth, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if we want to move on from that, we do have one last big piece of news that we had looked over in the last several weeks.
This one's deeply confusing to me.
Yeah, the statements made in it were just kind of like, huh? Like, if we're talking about Nightwish longtime bassist and vocalist. Marco, is it Hietala? Hightala?
It's all, I don't know, man. I can't pronounce foreign words.
I'm going to look it up.
What I can't get over is that he's Marco and his nickname is Marco.
That's the best part. It's like Marco with a K, quote, Marco with a C. Oh, great. I found a, let's see. Let me do the pronunciation here.
Hietala.
What do we got? Hietala. So I have.
Hietala.
Hietala. So I use OBS Studio, so anyone's going to hear me playing the pronunciation. Hietala.
Hietala.
Yeah. Hietala.
Yeah, he left the band, didn't he?
Yeah, he's gone.
Which is a pretty big deal. He's like I know we always talk about the guy in the band, and for a band that's gotten rid of like all their female singers,
lots of guys.
And since Tarja's gone, I mean, I guess he became the person. So him leaving is kind of a big deal. And in his resignation letter, there was one thing that really jumped out to me, and I don't know, no one else really kind of talked about it, but we're going to talk about it here because it's weird. For quite a few years now, I haven't been able to feel validated by this life. We have streaming company big guns demanding 9/5 work from artists of inspiration while unfairly sharing the profits. Even among the artists, we're the banana republic of the music industry. Biggest tour promoters squeeze percentages even from our own merchandise while paying dividends to Middle East. Apparently some theocracies can take the money from the music that would get you beheaded or jailed there without appearing as hypocrites. Just a couple of examples here. What?
That is not terribly articulate, but I've tossed and turned this in my mind a lot. And I think I understand what he's trying to say, but I'm not entirely sure because I can't find any documentation to support it.
Right.
My guess here is that he's talking about, like, with the streaming companies, he's talking about Spotify, like, basically taking all the surplus value from the streamings while leaving him, you know, like, $20 for a million streams. And I think he's trying to say that, like, the Saudis are deeply invested in Spotify. Like, does that make sense?
It's got to be, right? But,
well, the way it sounds is that he moves from the streaming stuff to biggest tour promoters squeeze percentages, even from our own merchandise, while paying dividends to Middle East. So it's, to me, it sounded like people booking Nightwish shows are giving money to pick your theocracy of choice in the Middle East.
Which is kind of strange, though. I guess it's possible 10 years ago, there was this huge FBI bust in Austin. These two brothers that owned like half of the bars in downtown Austin got their bars and clubs raided, and they got locked up. They're still locked up. They're going to be locked up for like forever because they were apparently funneling profits to Al-Qaeda. which is a pretty extreme example, but I guess it's possible that some of the promoters that they have are like funded by the Saudis or some shit like that. I can't put it together, and I'm trying.
The King of Jordan is just a huge Nightwish fan.
Aren't you the King of Jordan?
I am the King of all Jordans.
He is Jordan.
I want to know more, and what he has done here is he has specifically requested that no one contact him for 1 year exactly.
Well, that's very strange. There's a story behind all this, and I want to know it, and we just have nothing.
Well, he opens the whole statement with, "Dear people, I am leaving Nightwish and my public life." And so that's got to mean that he's just like, not only is he quitting Nightwish, but he just doesn't want to be kind of like metal famous anymore.
Like, that's fine. I mean,
that's, yeah, okay.
That's an acceptable thing to want. But you can't like throw this huge mystery meat at me and like just fucking peace out, because I got questions. I have follow-up questions about your tour promoters that are apparently funding, I don't know, some kind of theocracy. I want to know more.
So let me read the rest of his statement, because I mean, I don't think you're going to get answers out of it, but maybe more questions, and that's always fun. So he writes, "This past year has forced me to stay home and think, and I found myself very disillusioned about these and a lot of things. I found out that I am in need of that validation. For me to write, sing, and play, I need to find some new reasons and inspirations. My Walden, so to speak. And it's even in my book that I'm chronic depressive." I didn't know he had a book.
I didn't know. Yeah.
"And it's even in my book that I'm a chronic depressive. It's dangerous for me and the people around me if I continue. Some of the thoughts a while back were dark. Don't worry, I'm fine. I have my two sons, a wife, the rest of the family, friends, a dog, and lots of love. And I don't think that I'll be gone for good. So he continues, conspiracy is the word of the day, which is, yes, it fucking is. Like, what's going on with the Saudis, man?
Please let me know.
Yeah, for the people who like them, I need to say that my 55th birthday is now on 14th of January. How did it change? And I've certainly done my time for now. blaming, for instance, Tuamas, who's the Nightwish keyboardist and main songwriter, is an insult to both him and my free thinking. This is a very sad thing to all of us, too. Have a care, please. But of course,
until he said blaming, for instance, Thomas, I did not intend to blame Thomas. But now,
no point. now, Tuamas,
that you mentioned, I can't stop thinking about it. It's the Streisand effect of Nightwish.
And that's the keyboardist, right? That's like the guy with the pirate bandana and the eye makeup. That's got to be him.
Yeah. I don't know. You can't tell me not to blame Thomas, and then like you put a little bit of doubt in my mind.
Right. Is it insult to
both
him?
I'm going to be taking my leave of Tone of Hell Radio, but please don't yell directly at Brenna.
I mean, like, when you say shit like blaming Thomas is an insult to both him and my free thinking, it just makes it sound like, you know, Thomas is like, you know, Marco, get the fuck out, you're fired. And Marco's like, you can't fire me, I quit. Like, that's what that sounds like to me. It's Marco's free thinking. Okay.
There is also a possibility that all of the cryptic thoughts that we're reading into are just a result of being not American.
but
this is not his first language.
Right.
Or his depression. It could be that too.
Have a care, please.
I will have a care. I will
have a care. So this is the last bit, and something really strange he said, so I'll get into it. There are a couple of things agreed on that I will do on 2021. Otherwise, I kindly and with respect ask the media, bands, artists, projects, etc. to not ask me for anything within the next year. I have some reinventing to do. I hope to tell you about it on 2022. It's not a promise, though. Sounds like he's doing a solo album.
Well, right. I mean, he's hoping to tell us in 2022, but not if the Saudis get to him first.
Right, just don't. He can't. He's got to go off the grid for a year.
He's got to wait for the statute of limitations to end.
He says, I am so sorry about this. P.S. Tony Iommi is an exception to the no contact whatsoever. Childhood hero takes a precedence.
Tony, get in there. We got questions.
So apparently he's going to go give, like, you know, backpacks and smooches to Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. Like, coronavirus doesn't care if it's Tony Iommi.
I mean, you can call him up, you know?
He's like a nice old man who's gonna, well, he was, you know, maybe a not so nice old man. Because he wasn't a nice young man, certainly, from the things we've heard. But maybe he's calmed down. He's this old guy in a mansion, and you're gonna go over and fucking, from a different country, hang out with him. It's just like, leave him alone. He's got nurses. He's got telephones. Don't leave Tony Iommi alone. I don't care. He's not an exception. He's not.
I like that in Marco's request that you leave him alone, your takeaway is to leave Tony Iommi alone. Tony's like, why isn't anybody calling me?
My children don't talk to me.
I think that this is, you know, given me even more to think about, and I demand resolution. So let's make a pact right now to come back next year on this exact date, and we'll revisit with Marco Hietala and find out what's really going on.
I guess, yeah. We're not going to remember.
No. Write a fucking date down in your calendar or something. Just like call it the Breakfast Club or something. It'll be good. We'll see how we've grown and changed over the years.
January 31st, 2022, I will email Marco from Nightwish, formerly from Nightwish.
He might be back by then.
Maybe Napalm Records will release his, you know, I mean, the name of his album has to be Marco with a C in big letters, right?
I would hope so, yeah.
He's actually already released a solo album a year ago. Through Nuclear Blast, so who knows what else is next? Maybe it's just the.
Then who cares? What is he teasing? What?
He's going to reinvent himself. He said it here.
He's like, so, leave me alone. No promotion. By the way, things coming.
Apparently, he won the Finnish Masked Singer competition, so he can do whatever he wants.
Good for him.
He's coming back with a Klezmer album. There are big things coming from Margo. We just got to give him some space. He's writing Walden again.
I don't know. Do we have any other thoughts on this?
Tell me about the salads.
Yeah.
I want to know.
I mean, this could have all been avoided just saying, like, I am leaving. I am tired of doing this. See you later.
Yeah, but that's less fun. We wouldn't be talking about it.
Oh, yeah, it's less fun, but it raises a lot less questions, too.
The biggest tour promoters, they squeeze percentages even from our own merchandise while paying dividends to the Middle East. So if it's tour promoters, it's just, I don't know, are they talking like...
Is the Sex Pest guy also kicking dollars to, like, Boko Haram?
Right, because the Sex Pest guy was, I mean, I wish we had a name, but that was, I mean, I think majorly he was involved with, like, Nightwish and the like.
Yeah, he was. Huh. Hmm. All right, well, we got a new lead here.
Yeah, so we'll just have to shake down that guy. We got to go to Thailand to get answers.
Yeah, it's going to be just like a Van Damme movie from the 80s.
Yeah, we're going to send our best Toilet of Hell comment section agents.
John Finberg,
yeah.
We'll track him down and shake him down for info. We'll see what we can do on this next episode.
He was the booking agent for Nightwish, Epica, Amorphis, Warbringer, Suffocation, Immolation, Sonata Arctica, Overkill, and more.
Well, it sounds like we got a direct implication here, boys.
Sounds like you're in for waterboarding, John.
All right, well, join us next week when we waterboard John Fenberg to find out who's behind squeezing Nightwish.
Just the whole episode.
It'll be our highest rated episode ever.
All right, guys. Yeah, keep it metal. Don't waterboard anybody until we tell you otherwise. And have a good week. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.